Because Justice Miller is appearing by WebEx, she's asked me to preside, and I will be doing so. We've now been joined by Judge Piccolo, who will be participating in this case. Are there any questions before we begin? Very well, Mr. Krejci, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Jared Krejci and I represent the appellant Matthew Larson. To begin with, I did want to touch on the brief facts that set up the situation of this case. This is an appeal from an order of final settlement of an estate. It's the court authorizing how the distributions are done from the estate. The will in this case devises essentially half of Blaine Larson's estate to his son, Matthew Larson, who I represent, and the other half of the estate to Cindy Swoboda, who is unrelated by blood or marriage to Blaine Larson, but I understand they had a domestic relationship. So Cindy Swoboda is not Blaine Larson's intestate heir, but Matt Larson is, and his other intestate heir is his daughter, Amber Fixamer, who was not provided for by the will. So in the instance that Blaine Larson died intestate, essentially Amber Fixamer, his daughter, would have stepped in to Cindy Swoboda's share under the actual will. The other issue that sets up this case was that there was a will contest in this case where Ms. Swoboda prevailed in the will contest, and she was the proponent of the will and the personal representative under the will. And there was a will contest where Matthew Larson and Amber Fixamer were trying to set aside the will and have the finding that Blaine Larson died intestate. The third factor that sets up the issues in this case is that Blaine Larson had, his estate had essentially no residue. And strictly speaking, when the claims against the state and the costs and expenses of administration exceed the assets that are provided for in the residuary clause, there is no residue. So that sets up the first issue, which is where inheritance taxes and other liens are paid from. The county court found that according to a provision in Blaine Larson's will, the inheritance taxes could be paid from the estate assets. In coming to that conclusion, the county court relied upon a case called, I believe it's Shell.
Counsel, if there had been sufficient funds, residue of the estate, not specifically devised, would you quarrel with that language in the will?
No, there would be no dispute at all.
So really it goes to the issue of whether sufficient residue, if there isn't, what happens?
Yes.
What's your position then?
Well, my position is that since there's no residue in this case, then the provision in the will states that pay my debts, expenses, inheritance tax from the residue, that provision fails. And my position is based on the overwhelming body of common law interpreting wills that states that when there's no residue or the residue is insufficient, that directive fails either in whole or in part. Here it fails in whole. And in that instance, you go to the default statutory apportionment rule for inheritance tax, which is each party pays their own tax. So that was one error that the county court made in determining that, you know, the will directs that the inheritance tax is paid from the residue. There is no residue. That directive fails. And under the common law, which it seems to be the appellee found one case from Virginia that seemed to contradict this overwhelming common law rule. In that instance, when that directive fails, the parties are responsible for their own inheritance tax, and that was an error by the county court. The other issue was set up by the will contest and the particular positioning of the parties in this case, and that is the attorney fees. Now, this court over the years and very recently has had many opportunities to discuss good faith in the context of a personal representative receiving attorney fees and expert witness fees from estate assets. And throughout the entire course of the past history, our courts and this court has focused on good faith as a matter of honesty and fact. And in my brief, I term the court's past history as good faith as honesty and fact in acting with a good motive. And on the attorney fee issue, I am proposing.
Have we talked about it? Good motive, but it's partly if the legal positions you're taking, you have a subjective belief in their validity. I mean, that's how it was discussed in Gaventer recently, correct?
Yeah. Well, I read Gaventer recently, and my interpretation of the end of Gaventer, where he wrote about the attorney fees under the statute for the after death fees. The Gaventer talks about the legal positioning of the parties. And although it doesn't explicitly mean that the rule that I'm proposing is correct, but the language in Gaventer talking about the legal positioning of the parties, I believe, leaves the door very open to the rule that I'm suggesting that the court adopt based on the comment to the Uniform Probate Code provision. Because in this case, where the rule that I'm proposing is essentially the common fund doctrine. And in this case, the legal positions of the parties are that in the will contest, Cindy Svoboda inherits essentially half of Blaine Larson's estate if she prevails.
Isn't another way to look at it, though, is if she doesn't defend the will contest, then the testator's desires are not met, i.e., his daughter is disinherited or not disinherited? I mean, isn't that another way to look at it? Not just the compensation issue or what the personal representative may gain from defending the action?
Well, I answer that question in that the issue that we have here is an issue of attorney fees. And Cindy Svoboda was perfectly entitled, and she should have defended the will contest based on her own personal interest. And since she was defending only her personal interest and no other person, based on the comment, it's our position that she bears her own attorney fees.
The comment talks about if someone's pursuing an action solely for their own compensation, right? Isn't that the term that he used, compensation?
I believe that is the term that he uses.
So here, I mean, what she ultimately gets if she prevails in the will contest is recovery under the will. Right. We don't normally talk about that in terms of compensation. Does the term fit your argument?
I think it does, Your Honor. And the best argument that I have for that fit is because there's a separate statute that talks about personal representative fees, which arguably compensation could be personal representative fees that a personal representative is entitled to for their work. And so if you take the position that compensation only encompasses personal representative fees, then it's superfluous, then the comment that I'm addressing is superfluous to the statute that authorizes reasonable personal representative fees, because there's already a check based on the statute for personal representative fees to make sure that there's reasonableness and the general factors that the courts look at for attorney fees. In this case, the way that I view it, where I'm proposing essentially the common fund doctrine rule, it's not superfluous to compensation for normal, ordinary personal representative fees. So I think that's the best way to address that point.
So under your argument, if there had been one person other than Cindy Svoboda that would receive some even nominal amount under the will, she can get her attorney fees paid, but if she's the only one, nothing.
I think that's correct. And say there was a non-blood heir who received essentially a $500 devise. I think that, you know, regardless of the amount at issue, Cindy Svoboda would be, you know, vindicating those rights. And I think under the common fund doctrine type rule, I'm proposing that she would be entitled to pay her attorneys from estate funds in that situation.
I beg your pardon. So would your answers be the same whether or not she would have taken something nominal or incidental rather than half?
So in this case, if just to be clear, Justice Miller-Lerman, if Cindy you're asking a hypothetical where Cindy Svoboda inherited essentially 2% under the will?
Something like that, something other than half, which sounds like it might be worth a debate, but just something nominal, a token.
Well, I don't think that would change the proposed rule that I'm asking you to adopt, because I just view that in past history, before we had the probate code, these issues were addressed by the common fund doctrine. And I've cited older cases that apply the common fund doctrine in this type of situation. And I think a common fund doctrine like rule or the actual rule is appropriate under the comment, because very recently this court has talked about statutes that derogate common law. And in this situation, if you apply the common law, common fund doctrine rule under the comment, as I'm asking, it follows the framework of the statute not derogating common law unless that statute is clear.
Counsel, assume that we disagree with you on your attorney fee argument, but agree with you on your apportionment argument. Where does that take us?
Well, that takes us probably to a situation where it would be best if this court remands the issue to have the county court apply the law as you instruct. Otherwise, I don't think that it brings up any types of thorny issues. And I think what you may be asking, Justice Castle, is do we still have the lack of remainder in that situation, or lack of residue in that case? And we still would, because the federal estate taxes exceed what residuary assets there are. So no matter if where attorney fees come from, there's still no remainder.
The attorney's fees are paid out of the estate. The language in the will says that the debts of my debts shall be paid from the residue of my estate. Does this apportionment issue deal with attorney's fees as well, or is it just inheritance tax?
I view that provision of the will as not relevant to attorney fees, because these are Cindy Svoboda's attorney fees for her attorneys assisting her and acting as personal representative. So I don't view that provision as relevant at all to attorney fees. I think it may be relevant to the issue of liens, the real estate taxes, grants. But that those are the only two issues that I think it could be relevant.
I'm a little puzzled by your argument. Aren't the attorney fees administration expenses within the meaning of that phrase used in the apportionment clause that we're talking about? My personal representative shall pay from the residue, blah, 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 and all blah, 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 administration expenses.
Well, typically I have seen attorney fees be included as costs of administration in ordinary estates. But in this case, it is my position that they're her fees that she incurred for at least the will contest portion, and that the part of the probate code that may authorize using estate assets to pay them is the statute that we've been discussing for most of this argument.
Thank you.
Counsel, I have a quick question. So we have a PR in this case who was basically duty bound to defend the will. Would you agree under that statute? 302481, 3480. I mean, she was called upon to do something. Obviously, the will contest was filed. What would you expect the PR to do?
I actually do disagree with the contention that she had a duty to defend the will. I think she had a choice to defend the will, and I think that was her choice to make, and take no issue with her defending, making that choice. But I do cite language in the comment that I rely on heavily that states that if all of the successors of a will choose not to offer that will for probate, then the personal representative has a duty to follow the instructions of the successors.
That's your benefit of this argument.
Well, I think that this court has thoroughly rejected the benefit of the estate argument over and over again. So I'm not making a benefit of the estate argument. The argument that I'm making for the fees is essentially asking that the comment be applied as the common fund doctrine.
Shouldn't that be a trial court decision when we get into these will contest cases? Because the ultimate decision is good faith, right? Reasonableness, all that stuff. But good faith becomes kind of the touchstone of whether that's administrative expense or if it's going to be borne by somebody else.
Well, in this case, the trial court for the will contest was the district court. And there is a... I've seen it done different ways where you ask the district court for fees for the will contest portion. And in this case, the county court was asked to authorize those fees. And so I'm sorry to kind of sidestep your question, Your Honor, but the county court who made this decision was not the trial court for the will contest. Thank you, Your Honor. I see my time has been well expired. Thank you.
How much time did we take counsel over?
We had 6 minutes, 13 seconds.
We'll add that on to the appellees. Pete, I understand you are arguing by yourself.
I am.
Okay, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Jeffrey T. Pete. I represent Cindy Faboda, who is the personal representative. Some other pertinent facts that I think are available is that Ms. Faboda, record would reflect that Ms. Faboda was a long-term partner with the decedent and actually built a business with him, which was a pharmacy in Schuyler, Nebraska. And actually, the record would reflect that they worked long, long hours together. They also owned two homes together during the time, and at the time of his death, they just had the one home. There were several issues on appeal. It seems to me from, if I'm smart enough to listen a little bit, that the biggest issues are apportionment and abatement. But if you want me to talk about the other issues, I'm certain that in the attorney's fees issue, if you want me to talk about the other issues, I'll certainly do that. But I do believe on the other issues that those are more issues of fact, that the trial court listened to the evidence, reviewed the evidence, which was fairly extensive, and made decisions on that. And I don't think that it is egregious error for the court to rule on the issues of the real estate taxes, some of the funeral expenses, payment on insurance, and those issues. So I'm gonna hopefully at least leave those apart. I wanna go to the issue of apportionment. And I'll be very direct with the court. What I'm asking the court to do is to extend Shell, and I'm also asking that you look at the Stickley case that was cited out of Virginia. The court in the Stickley case said the pertinent inquiry is not whether a particular funds identified, but whether the testator intended the debts, administration costs, and estate and inheritance taxes be treated alike. And if you look at the will of the decedent, That's exactly what he says in Article 2. He's asking the personal representative shall pay from the residue of my estate, my debts, funeral expenses, administration expenses, and all estate, inheritance, succession, and transfer taxes imposed by the United States. We don't have federal estate taxes. This is a state inheritance tax issue, and a rather large one because it's 18% for Ms. Svoboda.
Isn't it clear that the residue is insufficient to pay all of those
things? It is, Your Honor. It is, Your Honor. And that's the problem with the will. I mean, this is not a will I drafted, nor is it one I would ever draft. And I would hope nobody in my firm would either. But it's what I was dealt. That's the cards that I was dealt with. And I do, I really ask you to look at that Stickley case. And it is, there's a split on jurisdictions. This is one, the Virginia case is one case. And then you have all, you have other jurisdictions that are take the other side. That's a strict application. But in this case,
counsel, if that clause does not reference inheritance tax or succession tax, and it just dealt with debts and funeral expenses, administrative expenses of the estate, and there wasn't sufficient residue of the estate, what would happen to those expenses? How would those be dealt with?
The inheritance tax?
Not the inheritance tax.
You have to go back. I think you have to go back and look at the abatement clause. And I think that in this case, there was no demand on the personal representative for the non-probate assets. And so you have to go back and follow the specific tenets of the abatement clause. And that's why I believe that you get back to, in this case, the specific devices. And really, the whole asset of the estate was the proceeds from the sale of the pharmacy. And so that's how we applied it. And then that's how the lower court ruled in our
There's favor. Been lots of jurisdictions that say that if the residue of the estate is insufficient to pay the inheritance tax, that clause fails. Is that correct? Is that?
But they say if the residue
is insufficient to pay the inheritance tax.
Well, I think they do, but I think you have to look at the, just like the county court did. I think you have to look at the whole estate. You have to look at the complete will. You look at the intent of the decedent, and you have to look at our statutes.
But here we have a clause that refers not to probate estate like
right.
a shell,
right.
but just the residue.
Right. It is different. That's why I'm asking the court to move the ball. I'm asking the court to move the ball beyond shell, like the Virginia court.
But isn't your task made a little bit more difficult, or maybe a lot more difficult, by the fact that we've said that the statutory apportionment is the default, and if that's going to be supplanted, there can't be any ambiguity.
Well, I think our statute is similar to the Virginia statute, and I think you have to go back and look at the complete will and look at what the intent of the testator was.
But here we have said any ambiguities are resolved in favor of the statutory pattern, and you have an argument based perhaps on the whole of the will, but then we also have the use of just the word residue.
Right. There's no question that the word residue is problematic, and unfortunately, since this case come up, I've looked at, every time I look at a will, I look at what the language is, and I have to say I'm embarrassed. I probably used that same language.
How do we glean from the entirety of the will that's the intent of the testator to have the inheritance tax paid from the bulk of the probate estate? Where does that get read into the will? When it's used specifically says residue of my estate.
Yeah, I have to get, honestly, Judge, I've told you, I have to get beyond the word residue.
Right. But I'm saying, what part of the will beyond that clause gives us the intestator or the testator's intent to have the inheritance tax paid by the ministry?
Well, I think that, again, much like Shell, the two provisions in the, you have to look at the hall of Article 2, where he's trying to say, basically, he's trying to put it as an administrative, the taxes are an administration expense of the estate.
That's the key, is to say that inheritance tax is an administrative expense of the estate, kind of like the Stickley case did and said, they're all expenses, they get paid out of all the probate assets, and that's how we deal.
And exactly, Your Honor, and I think that was the intent of the decedent in this case. If you look at the whole will, and then it's clear. I think it's time to move the ball. I think the problem that the court's going to have this will come up again, because what we're encountering out in the probate law is illiquid estates because of non-probate transfers, and so I think the issue of non-probate transfers and I think is going to become a big issue before the court, and how we pay the general administration expenses, how we pay the inheritance taxes, in this case.
Counsel, so you think Shell directs us to where we need to go with this tax?
What I'm asking you is to expand beyond Shell, much like the court in Virginia did with the Stickley case. So I do think if to rule in my favor, it is an expansion of Shell. And but I look at the two principles in the Shell case is they talk about looking at the will as a whole and what the intent of the decedent was, and is the language sufficient when they put that language in with the general administration clause, the general administration expenses, is whether that language is sufficient to get where I'm asking you to go to.
But the directive in Shell was first you talked about residuary clause, and then underneath that inheritance tax, you talked about the entire state. So there was reference to, right? Is that?
That is correct.
And you're suggesting in your brief anyway that there's got to be a coupling of those?
Yes.
And you think that the Article 2 and this will coupled all that?
Yes,
to fit within
I do.
The Shell
I do,
analysis?
Your Honor. Okay. I do, Your Honor. You want me to go to the fee issue or?
Well, let me ask you the same question I asked your opponent, which is assume that we agree with him on the part about the residue, but we agree with you on the attorney fee issue. Where does that take us?
Well, thank you. Again, I would agree with Mr. Krejci that you have to be very specific with your remand and your instructions back to the county court.
We were to extend Shell the way you advocate that it be extended. What, imagine all the second and third order effects of that for me, because I can't imagine. But someone like you who practices in this area could. So help me know what the effect would be in the cases that we will hear in the future.
Well, I think you'll have to look at the language. I think as lawyers, we'll have to ferret out and do a good job of saying what was the intent of the decedent. And we would look back not to the will, but perhaps maybe to the notes of the drafting attorney and what the intent was, and the attorney who drafted the will, what the intent was.
So we're going to be in a world of extrinsic evidence.
I think you're on the cusp of a lot of estate and trust litigation. I think, unfortunately, I think there's a perfect storm out there with a lot of non-lawyers now drafting wills and trusts and people getting their information off the internet. And it's, I think the estate and trust litigation practice is becoming much more difficult and more pervasive. And I think that for the old probate lawyers like me, it's more of a challenge because there's a lot of litigation lawyers involved now and the two don't always mix very well. I think you're on the cusp of a lot of litigation, and I think you're going to see a lot more of this.
Isn't one of the fundamental principles of will construction is that you look to the four corners of the will?
And you do.
Are you advocating? Seems to me you're advocating for something different in this case. Are you?
No, I'm looking for the four corners of the document and what was the intent of the decedent. And I think that much like the Stickley case, I think that the court here in the lower court here looked at, you could argue they made this finding that they looked at what the intent of the decedent was. And I think the intent of the decedent was to pay the taxes, just like the general administration expenses, everything off the top. And I think that's a continuation of the Shell case.
So we just ignore the word residue.
No, we don't ignore the word residue. I mean, the problem is the word residue is in this case, and I have to deal with the word residue. But I think you have to look at if it's not a well-drafted will, and you can see what the intent of the decedent was, then you go to what are the next steps. And that's what we've tried to do in our brief is to say, these are the next steps. You have to look at the abatement clause but you have to accept the apportionment issue first, and then you have to go back and look at the abatement clause.
So you accept that the residue is there, you expend it, and then after that, you look at the testator's intent.
The testators, I've looked at the statutes and the law, but I have to, but say, but try to see what the testator's intent was.
Does that take us to where probate judges are getting out their Ouija board to decide what the intent was? I mean,
no,
I really am concerned once once we cross that boundary from the four corners of the will.
Well, we're a court. It's a
you,
court of,
you contend we're not crossing that boundary.
No, I don't think you are. I think you're a court of equity, and you we all, just as the lawyers promoting the will, we're trying to promote what the intent of the decedent was in this case. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do, is say what was the intent of the decedent. And I think that clearly in this case, with the language of the will, the intent of the decedent was that the inheritance taxes be paid out of the be paid as the general administration expenses.
Isn't construction of a will a matter of law, not a matter of equity?
It is a matter of law.
All right.
And
so,
and clearly in this case, the scope of review on the issue of apportionment is different than the scope of review on the other issues.
Before your time expires, would you like to discuss the attorney fee issue?
Yeah, I will. Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. I mean, I think the attorney fee issue, I looked to the two Nebraska statutes first. I looked to the case law that expands on those statutes, In Re Estate of Reimer. And then I also look at what is the record that's before you. And the record is very extensive before you on the attorney fees issue. What we tried to do there is follow what I believe Judge Castle set out in previous opinions. If you want attorney's fees, here's how you do it. In a probate cases and in estates, what I talk about and even speak on the issue is you get a good talk, raise the issue of fees initially, get a good engagement letter, and then do a detailed and itemized billing. Back on the issue of fees, one other comment I wanted to make, one factual point that I think is a distinction, is that Ms. Svoboda hired her own personal attorney throughout these proceedings to represent her. There was another attorney in Schuyler, Nebraska that individually represented her as an individual.
So are the fees to defend the will contest administrative expenses of the estate?
Yes.
And why so?
Well, because I believe that's what the case law says, and I think it falls in one of your questions earlier, one of the justices' questions in Article 2, aren't attorney's fees part of the administration expenses? I think that's very clear in the statutes and in the supporting case law.
What about Ms. Svoboda gaining a benefit from the will contest?
Yeah, I don't think she gained any benefit. It's only been almost 5 years since her significant other has been deceased now. The record's clear. If you go back and you look at the testimony in the case, she tried everything she could to get rid of this case. She tried mediation. She tried motion for summary judgment. The important, unfortunate thing in that is Judge Gilbride retired, and then Judge Steinke took it over, and pretty hard to take a district judge to move into a new case. But she tried everything she could possibly do to reduce and get rid of this litigation.
Is her specific devise compensation?
No. No. Well, if you look at the inheritance tax pleadings, which are in the court in the bill of exceptions, or in the transcript, but you can see that she received a lot of assets by as did the appellant. They received assets by non-probate transfers, and then also in the will.
Other questions?
I see I'm out of time.
Your time has expired. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
How much time did we take counsel for appellee overtime?
44 seconds, Your Honor.
Mr. Krejci, you have 44 seconds.
There's a lot I didn't touch on, and I don't want to get back into the things that I've talked about, but
the headstone issue. This is a new statute that talks about disposition of a person's remains. It's my position that disposition is where your body is, whether you're in the ground or whether you're in an urn, and it doesn't necessarily cover the issue of a headstone. So my position is that that new statute just doesn't apply here, and it's a matter of reasonableness that buying two headstones was imprudent. The last issue I wanted to touch on was 30-24, 120. It just doesn't apply in this case. We're not a claimant trying to recover assets that have been distributed already. So the county court erred in applying that statute. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. All time has expired. The cause is submitted, and the court is adjourned for the day. Thank you.